all seeing about the building of a chapel and all the church people was going to manhandle him. He wasn't a fit character to be around. So my great grandfather took him up across the Corrocks up to Sulby in the early hours of the morning. And when they were going up Bellevue Hill at Lazare, the birds were singing in the trees in the early morning. And Charles Wesley wrote to him the words, "Over a thousand tongues to sing my great Redeemer's praise, the glories of my God and King, the triumphs of his grace." He wrote that up at the top of the hill. When my great grandfather left him, he came back again. And then there was a chapel built at the Sandy in 1862. It took a long time afterwards before the chapel was built. But there was a Sunday school built before that in 1810. What time was Wesley here, Charles Wesley was here, I cannot say.
And where did he preach?
I don't know that either. I don't know where he preached. But he lived, my great grandfather lived at Brook House at Sandy Gate, and he housed him there for the night. Yes, there is such a thing as people struggling with their own spirit. This old Bill Quiet, when he was coming home from the fishing, he came on a man in the road struggling. And the sea boots, he had the soles practically worn off the sea boots struggling. And after he was spoken to, the man was all right. And he asked to see if he was the other man. He was struggling with another man, he was, as he thought. But he only lived some weeks afterwards. His constitution was gone that low that he died shortly afterwards. That's the old people believed in those things them times. People that was traveling and going away from home used to be that when they were gone from home, they would always come back about twilight, getting dark, and they'd go round about in the hackett and pull the ropes down on the stacks. And I heard one man saying that he was always going after the man to see could he get in contact with him to see what was he wanting to be coming back for. And everything looked after so careful when he was away. But if he was told about it for not to come back when he was going away, he was never seen, he would never come back, he'd never bother them.
And how far away had he gone?
Just to Liverpool.
And this always happened? And
this always happened. If they forgot to tell him for not to come back, he would always have to say to him to see that everything was all right in the night time. Yeah, that strong influence, that's the living spirit traveller.
That's a curious thing.
But the dead spirit never travels. I've seen an instance myself of the living spirit travelling. I was in a house and the woman asked me to stay and have a cup of tea. My man has came home now and she put the tea and all out on the table and she went to the door and I saw him quite plain. I saw the man quite plain, standing outside at the entrance coming into the front part of the house. And she said, "Come along now, Johnny, your tea is ready." I was having my tea and there was no sign of him coming, and she went to have a look and there wasn't a mark, footmark or anything seen. The man was gone. And he came 2 hours afterwards, very, very sick. They'd been, himself and another fellow had been opening a safe and counting the money belonging to a club affair. And the other man, such a hurry, slammed the safe door to, and he caught the other man's fingers in it. And it made him that sick that he was, must have been, well, I was thinking up. I was wishing I was at home, I was that sick. And there was that living spirit, both of us saw it quite plain.
Yes?
And I was seeing this woman in my lap, and I was telling her about these things, and she said that she was getting the cows down to the breast of the hill, but to bring them home for milking. And when I was coming down the hill and put them in the cow house, I saw my mother with the cans going into the cow house. And when I got in the cow house and the cattle tied up, there was no mother to be seen. And I went into the house and inquired to see where she was, and she said she had never been out. And the most peculiar thing, I saw quite plain, she said, quite plain, that's the only time ever I saw the living spirit travelling.
What was the story about the barn then, Mrs. Kate?
Well, there was a farmer in Andrus, and they were getting one of the binders. They were new out then, and quite a novelty. And the binder came home, and so make sure that nothing would happen to it. On the night, they put the bread and cheese and all out for the fairies, and in the morning it was all gone. The fairies had eaten all up, so they went to go to cut the corn, and of course all the neighbours from round about and far and near were coming to see this new binder at work, and something went wrong with the binder, so the fairies had ate the provisions and butched the binder as well, so that was off.
How long ago was that?
Oh, 40, 50 years ago.
When was the first binder, would you say?
First binder, about 90 years ago, if I last. That'd be about, Mrs. Brew would be 100 now. She'd be only a young girl when she remembered it. And the crowds of people in the Rendu Road was like a motor race day, looking at this wonderful apparatus, cutting the corn and throwing the sheaves out, all tied, ready for bringing home and putting in a stack.
They thought it was a wonderful thing.
They thought it was a wonderful thing at that time. And then they had a potato setter done, and that was made by Thomas Kamard, an uncle of mine, was done down at Smale. And there was an elevating belt coming up through a hopper, and was taking one potato at a time, and when it was turning over, it was dropping the potato into a chute. And that chute was coming along in the ridge, and was setting the potatoes better than setting with the hands. But they had to go where there was an odd one missed. They had to walk along the ridges and have looked to see where they were wanting to get a potato put into the place of the one that would be an odd one missed here and there.
Mm. And this binder, where did that come from?
The binder was an American binder. It was called the Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no canvases on it. It was chains that was elevating the corn up to the tying apparatus on the binder.
What's the earliest kind of reaper you've heard of, Mr. Collister?
The dray reaper.
Mm, what was that like?
There's one down at the old houses there, one belonging to the Willow Grove people.
Still there?
It's down in the patch, but it's all down there. James Brew was going to put it together. One time he thought it would be useful for the museum to have it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never done. It was never made up. And that reaper belonged to the Willow Grove people, and was put down there when they left Willow Grove. And there was that reaper, two horses. One horse would pull it, and sometimes there'd be two in tandem going, mm-hmm. one in front of the other.
It was very heavy, was it?
Well, it wasn't heavy because it was a slow, the knives were slow motion. It wasn't like the up-to-date rape of speed and all like they got at the present moment at all.
That was Callister, when it grew.
The rapers down there, it's called, they called them the old dray rape, I do.
Mm.
Then you had to set it on a bogey and catch it from, you couldn't lift the bar up like the rapers they got to the present time.
Yeah.
And then Ian and Martin once started to make rapers down at St. Jude's, and that's a long time since. I've got a raper there now, lying up in the Hackett. It was made by Nina Martin between 80 and 90 years ago.
Is that fairly complete?
It's all complete, all to the till, and the till has been once taken parts off to fit on other rapers. This was lying up in Willie's Hackett there.
What about the Ferguson reapers? Had you ever had any experience with those?
Daniel Kirby had one of them.
Mm-hmm.
They were very good at cutting hay and all the high speed in the knives.
Hmm. And which was the earliest?
The dray raper was the earliest.
Mm-hmm.
The dray.
You were a shoemaker by trade then, were you, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, a shoemaker by trade from 14 till us. 69 and a half.
Where was that?
Port St. Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Making your boots.
Oh?
Making boots, shoes, slippers, sea boots.
Sea boots?
For a pound apiece.
How did you measure them? What sort of measurements did you take?
Well, we were getting a list of paper and putting it round the joints of the foot and round the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a thing on purpose for taking the length of the boot off the foot. And when we made the shoe, if the foot was measuring fours, we made the shoe sevens.
Why was that?
Three sizes bigger than the foot.
Was that for sea boots?
All sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Three sizes bigger than the foot, all over, everything.
And was all the work done by hand?
All done? No. This joker used to close opus.
Machine.
Do all the machine work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wanting to sell it, and he's an old friend, and he's sitting there 12 or 13 years doing nothing.
You don't use it at all now?
No, it's not used. It's done nothing for 12 or 13 years.
Mm. And what about the prices of the shoes and boots?
Well, sea boots was a pound, and low shoes was 9 and 6 and 10 and 6.
Mm.
A pair.
Was it only men's boots and shoes?
Men's. We're making mostly men's and boys.
Mm. You didn't make women's shoes?
Well, we were making a nod there of women's. Used to make elastic sides with buttons up in the front of them.
Did you?
Elastic sides without buttons. We're making all sorts.
Mm. Where about in Port St. Mary were you?
Opposite the police station.
Mm.
The shop is there, still empty.
Is it?
Mm.
And who did you serve your time with?
With my uncle.
Mm-hmm. He was Madrill too, was he?
Yes.
Mm.
He was my mother's brother.
Mm. And were there many more boot and shoe makers?
Oh, yes. There was Teddy Callister, J.J.
Mm-hmm.
Quattro, Jim Crimm. There's one, two, there's three, four. There's four in Port St. Mary, and now there's not one, only at the four roads.
Mm. And they all made the boots, did they?
They were all making. Some boots are about that size.
Little tiny things.
I've got one pair of lasses still that we used to make them on. Would you like to see them?
Yeah, very much.
I'd hope on that to get them. They tacked a piece of leather on that wet.
That's on the sole?
On this wooden last.
Yes.
Then you turn it upside down and you cut round about the shape, and then you pull over this, draw it in over the leather, and nail it down.
With nails?
Well, yes, you take the nails out, Arthur. You stitch it then.
Mm-hmm.
You stitch it round, take the nails out as you stitch.
Oh.
And then you put a piece on top of that upper and peg that down. That's the one, the sole. And then you put that top sole on. And then you build the heel up.
So these wooden pegs were really inside the sole of the
shoulder? Wooden pegs inside there, yes. And then you cut them all out. Cut them out with a knife.
The pegs, you cut them out, they're not in the finished shoe.
No, you cut them all out, even, that you won't touch the foot.
Where did you get your leather from?
Liverpool.
Did you? Didn't use any Manx leather?
Well, yes, we used to get some from Cane and the Tanner and Douglas.
Did you?
Mm.
Which was better? Was the Manx leather good?
Well, the upper leather we very often got from Cane. But
did you?
Luckily, we had to get it crossed because Cane gave up.
Mm.
The last time I was in Douglas, the tan pits were all full of cars. There were pits in the ground just like dug in the ground just like a grave in the churchyard, and full of liquid and the skins all in it. And I was having a look in, and it was all cast, I was saying, one time I was up in Douglas. I haven't been near it since then.
Is that near St. George's Church?
Eh?
Whereabout was this tannery?
Well, I think it was Weld Road Hill it was in.
Oh, up there, yes.
Mm. And when Cain gave up, Hudson took it over.
Mm-hmm.
And Hudson's nephew took it over, and he's dead, and his son is running the job now in King Street.
I see.
But he's only selling in repair,
mm-hmm.
selling leather and repair shoes.
Yes, sir. That's a very nice old chair you've got in the
kitchen there. There's one belonging to my aunt.
Is it?
Her aunt, my aunt's husband's father made it.
How old do you reckon it'll be?
Oh, it would be up well under 200 years.
Is it?
Yes.
An old armchair?
Yes.
Mm. And it's always been in your family, has it?
It's been in their family, Hudgens family.
Hudgens?
My aunt was married into the family.
Mm. Where was he adjoining?
Pardon?
Whereabout did he live?
He lived in Fisted there.
Mm.
And he worked in the Simon Jack in South Africa, a joiner.
Oh, yes. And did he used to make a lot of furniture?
Pardon?
Did he used to make a lot of furniture?
No, he just had things.
Mm. Have you got anything else he made?
Yes.
What's that?
That thing that the electric stove was sitting on, he made it.
Did he?
Mm. That was my uncle, my aunt's man.
That's a very nice chair. How old were you when you started, Mr. Moore?
12 years when I went to sea in a boat called the Alpha with my dad.
Mm.
My dad was skipper. And then I come home and I went in the schooners. And when I was 14, I was in the Reaper with Master Captain Elliot. And we loaded a grain bound for Preston. And she sprung a leak and nearly drowned all hands. That was a good many years ago. That'd be 70 years ago.
Yeah. Where was that?
Preston, not Preston.
Oh, yes. Where else were you sailing?
Oh, well, I sailed in the schooners all my life, mostly.
Did you?
I was away too, you know. I was 30 years away, so I came home here to this house. said, and I lost the wife here.
Mm-hmm. In the Manx schooners you were, eh?
Oh, they were all Manx.
Mm.
I was in a Chester River schooner called the Gladys, Sea Master. And in the First War, I was in a steamer called the Clansman,
mm-hmm.
sailing to France.
When you went to the fishing first of all, where did you go when you went with your
Crookhaven.
Father? Did you?
Crookhaven.
Mm-hmm.
Crookhaven, Baltimore, Castlehaven, Bayhaven, Valencia, all over.
Mm.
And
did you sail from Fort St. Mary?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Sit down and let's
Were there many going in those days when you went?
Yes, there was 125 boats belonging to here.
Mm.
Yeah? And 180 belonged to Peel. They all went by numbers, 1, 2, 3 upwards.
Mm.
We went away in the month of March, well, the latter end of March.
Mm.
And we come back on the 15th to the 20th of June.
And what was it like sailing down to Ireland?
Well, we were all sailed, we had no motors. There's no steam and no motors. And I've seen us leaving Port St. Mary on a Thursday and we're round the Chicken Rock at 2:30 on Thursday afternoon and we're taking our tea in King's Sail Lock at the Cove Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going for you? But there was a boat done us faster. A boat called CT4, the Swift. She done it in 24 hours. Well, there was a big fleet of boats here then.
Mm.
Bakers was going, grocers was going.
Nearly all fishermen?
All fishermen. Mostly. Well, they were all fishermen and schoonermen.
Yes,
Master Clugish, the sailmaker, and Master John Watterson, better known by Johnny Janine.
Mm.
Yes. Oh, I knew them. He made the sails for all the vessels.
Mm.
Their relations is in Douglas.
Yes.
Ned Cubbin. And then they're all related to her. And the Clugish is alive yet, the young one, his daughter. She's married to Bill Castain, the diver, from the Four Rows.
Is it pretty ancient?
I should think it's about 200 years of age.
Do many people remember anything about it?
Well, the old lady that had it had the license for 60 years, Mrs. Gavin.
Mm-hmm.
And my father came up about 2 years before the big snow that was. Snow was in 1895, and there's been no license to it since. So he used to get people calling for years and used to walk into the kitchen and ask for a pint after he'd come up there. So even on a Sunday morning, pint please. So. Yeah, so he said you'll have to walk on a bit further.
That was very inconvenient for them.
Yeah, very.
There are no old seats or anything like that left inside too.
No.
It's been entirely converted into a house, hasn't
it? No. There was one in.
Mm-hmm. What kind?
Well, there's part of it in the wall yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Inside?
Inside. And then they had pegs all rolled up on the wall in the kitchen to hang your coats and hats on. I think they're there yet.
And what kind of a seat was it? Was it a bench or a...
A bench, I should think, a wooden bench affair. And it was, the side of it was carved, it looked to be a fancy end on it.
And you said that this old old lady across the way had a...
Miss Joyce.
Yes, had a little...
She's got a pint mug belonging to her.
What was it made of?
It's just like the ordinary cups you buy. I don't think it's china.
Ware of some sort, I'm
yes,
not sure.
I think it's china.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there may be something on record about this place.
I should think so. The beer in those days was a penny a pint. The best was 3 pence a pint. And Miss Joyce used to get a pint of beer for an old Mr. Collister. And used to put it on his porridge every night. And he would be giving her a halfpenny for getting it. Yeah.
That's one of the old grills, isn't it?
Gears, isn't it? High and low gear, and there's a self feed, and you can turn it at the base. But today we, of course, I got a modern one.
That's not the very oldest type, is it?
No, not the very oldest type. The oldest type is,
how is this turned?
I mean,
do you get to...
Well, that makes... That wheel on the top of this machine carries the speed. It's like... without it on, it wouldn't carry the revolutions.
Mm. You still use it, of course.
Oh, yes. It's quite good. Yes. Some of the old... And then... That's a cutting machine there, and that's been in use for about... 50 or 60 years.
That's the, for the iron.
Yes, you can cut iron, you can cut car tube with that.
Can you?
Yeah, heavy car tube.
And do you use electricity now, or the old bellow?
No, I use the electric fan, and the old bellows are not in use now. That was a 32-inch bellows. And that bellows was in Foxtel Mine, and not Foxtel Mines, but Langness Mines one time. And that's not Father's bellows, I bought that one. Of course, it was second hand when I bought it. It's a very old bellows. It was in Langness Mines, 32-inch bellows, at 32 inches across the top. So that'll have a history of its own, I should think.
It'd be hard to find anybody who knew that.
Well, there used to be a man by the name of Mr. Dickett, and he looked after the mines. He used to mine copper at Langness. Now, I've seen it coming to the top.
Have you?
Yeah.
How long ago?
Let's see, maybe 40 years ago, I should think. Mr. Lawson, Tommy Lawson, that's Bill Lawson's grandfather here, he was alive at the time. He worked in Foxton mines, and he was in the deepest mines in the world out in Africa. And he came home, and of course he knew the job related to Seb, so there was a man named Mr. Dick. He lived in Ballasalla House. I was either the owner or the part owner of the Langness Mine. But it's gone out, that mine, the same as Foxton. But they must have had a smith down there to sharpen the tools.
Mm.
That bellows belonged to Langness, so they must have had a small forge down there.
Well, it's only come here fairly recently then.
Well, it's Baptist here about 10 or 12 years.
And what did you have it before
my
that, in your father's time?
Oh, my
still older one?
Brother's got done. It was 50 years of age and it got holes in it.
Mm.
But it's still in use. He sold that Bella's
mm.
Louis Kirkle, Mr. Louis Kirkle, Balliol Ferry.
Was he a blacksmith?
Partly, he could do a bit of it.
There's an old mine then down here, is there, Mr. Kwan?
Yes.
Where's that down?
Between Sham, Polkernick and Balliol has a farm.
Mm-hmm. And what's the story you've heard about?
It's a mine hole. Mm-hmm. Georgie reckons that, well, when he was a lad, he used to play in this mine hole, and there was a truck, and the lines and all was there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this truck, we used to play in this truck, and they used to run the truck back.